welcome to another special edition of the EC Podcast, Riding in Cars with Boys, talking about cricket. I'm Tim Cutler, and I'm here in a Kia Carnival Uber on the way to playoff number one here in Dubai, here with Jay Dancing Arnie, sitting in the front getting some very important caffeine. How are you going, Jay?
Oh, I'm doing great. I really hope this is strong coffee because it's not working so far. And I'm so excited for these last four games, even though my voice may not indicate that at the moment.
And a very good friend of the podcast, you'll have heard him on it before numerous times, and especially from the balcony in Windhoek, Bertus de Jong from CricBuzz. Bertus, welcome.
Hi, Tim. Yeah, great to be back on the pod. Great to be Airbnb buddies again.
Yeah, it's a little bit hard. It's not a very visual medium here, but I guess we can talk a little bit about the Airbnb maybe later on. But the most important bit is that we're on our way to playoff number one. The Netherlands up against the UAE. The winner will clinch a semi-final spot, but more importantly, their ticket to Australia next year, 2020, in the Men's T20 World Cup. And later on this evening, we have Oman against Namibia. Now, Bertus, from a Dutch perspective, how do you think they've gone so far?
Well, I think given the form they were in the run-up to the tournament, they were probably quite worried, and I think that if you'd offered them a second-place finish at the start of the week, they might just have taken it. But, of course, on the last day coming down with... certainly when PNG were six down in the power play, they might have just begun to hope that a first-place finish and a direct qualification was on the table. So I think maybe they're just feeling a little bit let down at this point that they're having to go through the hard way after all. This very much a must-win game, really, because you don't want to come up against a fresh Scotland tomorrow.
Jay, you've been here longer than us. You were at the Academy grounds following your beloved, I guess, second place. You being Hong Kong born and bred, but you got a soft spot for Singapore. How have you seen the Netherlands team develop? We know there was a lot of, not upheaval, but a lot of choppy and changing leading up to the event, and they've probably only just got to the point where they're able to put their best team, or at least select their best team on the field. How have you seen the Netherlands develop over this event so far?
Well, you know, I was a little surprised before the tournament. I think there was a game where they got bowled out for around 100, maybe a little less, maybe a little more. And, you know, even the bookies had Scotland as firm favorites, you know, heading into the tournament with the Dutch a close second. But, you know, aside from a slow start in the power play, you know, in the last game, a few issues with selection, I'd say. I think they have one of the strongest bowling lineups in the tournament. And... you know, just having that versatility, because sometimes you're playing on short boundaries, right? So they've got the versatility. They've got two really good left arm spinners in Rola and the skipper Peter Cilar, of course. So I think they're looking pretty good for World Cup qualification.
Now they come up against the UAE, who have had, well, tumultuous would be the only way we could describe their lead up to the event and even during the event. Bertus, I'll probably leave it to you to talk about a little bit about that and to bring us up to speed, because we've had a lot of conversations offline before talking today, but they've been through a lot of upheaval, haven't they?
Well, yeah, then they had three first choice players suspended as a result of a match-fixing investigation ahead of the tournament. And they were, of course, able to replace those as apparently squad selection is not something that's terribly... is taken terribly seriously anymore, certainly at least before the first game is played. But they've now lost, of course, two more in Ashfaq Ahmed, who's also been suspended, and Ghulam Shabir, who has, I guess, absconded, is the only word you could say, from the squad, and is now in Pakistan. And in what I can only describe as an utterly baffling decision, the event technical committee for the tournament has allowed them to actually bring in two replacements, both for Ashfaq and Ghulam Shabir, in Faizan Asif, who's he's an aggressive opening batsman, has done very well in domestic cricket here in the UAE, and the young keeper Aravind. Now, to my mind, I can't imagine what possible justification there is for allowing a team to replace two players, one of whom is suspended, and the other one has simply left, with, frankly, no explanation whatsoever. And it sort of makes you ask, firstly, what's the point of naming squads at all? Secondly, what possible reason could there be to allow a replacement for a player who has simply just not turned up to a game? And this is a tournament where we've been playing in, you know, they've been playing in 40 degree heat, and we're seeing several players now have been hospitalized with heat stroke or dehydration. And the idea that you can bring two fresh players in at the back end of a tournament for a must-win game like this, it's just astonishing to me.
Well, that's the off-field, and I guess also on-field, the fact that they're able to have replaced these players. But a big thing for me is just how well they've performed under these conditions. And yes, they're playing at home and they'd be used to the warm conditions, but to see them come through, I guess you could say with a wet sail, don't mind us, we're just at the security check to get in, showing our VIP parking pass. Thanks for the tip, Peter Della Penna. The performance of Rohan Mustafa has probably been expected, because we know he's a fighter, and especially in these sort of circumstances, he's definitely impressed, even beyond maybe of what we'd hoped or expected to see, but been very pleased by the performance of Mohammed Usman in the middle order.
Yeah, I mean, you have to give credit to the what remains of the UAE squad. At the end of the day, you know, you're missing these players. They're allowed to bring in replacement players, but you still don't get to play your first choice team. And for them to come back from a blow like that just immediately before the tournament and perform the way they have, and Usman's knock against Canada that we watched was just, I mean, it's one of the, I think Paul Radley said it was one of the greatest knocks he'd ever seen, played for the UAE, and it's hard to argue with him.
Yeah, I've got to agree there. We go back to the likes of having Kerim Khan carrying the UAE's hopes on his shoulders for a decade or so. But look, he's been there and thereabouts. But I think, what did he call him? The sort of the anonymous man or the background man, I think, that Rad has referred to him. And Paul Radley's been in the UAE for, I think, 15 years or 20 years now. And he sort of ridden the ups and downs with them. So he's written some great pieces, by the way. Some of the better pieces come out of the event. So hi, Paul. We're sitting down with Barnaby Reed, of course, who now freelances around the traps, including for the Bundesliga, but also another EC contributor last night. And we were just going through how big this has been and how interesting that the communication and whatnot coming out of the Emirates Cricket Board or lack thereof has made it very hard to report, which is always tough when it comes to anti-corruption matters, having been through it myself and knowing what you can say and can't say. But I guess the reality is you've got to have a soft spot for the performance of the guys that are left on the field for the UAE. And that this is going to be a cracker of a game first up in the afternoon sun in Dubai. It must be pushing mid to high 30s. I don't have the Dulux weather wall with the player comfort factor to help me out. But these teams have both played within the last 2 days. The Netherlands had a day game. And, of course, the loser of this match, we talked about the winner going through to the World Cup, but the loser will come up against Scotland tomorrow, 24 hours later, at the same time in the sun. So there's a lot at stake, and you could say that the second and third team placed teams do have an advantage and they got second by the cherry, but to have to play twice in 2 days is a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, the simple fact is that you have two games and you only need to win one of them. So however much the heat and the fitness questions are likely to affect the loser, you've got to say, going into it, of course, you'd want to have two shots at winning. What I would say, though, is I think that whoever does lose this game today probably will be at a disadvantage against Scotland once that result is in. And, and I think it's going to be a tight game. You know, the Dutch have been looking a much improved side. Certainly Tendeschater and Ackerman coming into the side has really answered some middle-order questions for them. But this is still a UAE team, or at least in large part a UAE team, that whitewashed the Dutch 4-0 in the Netherlands. And we talk a lot about the chopping and changing that's happened in the Dutch side, but of course the UAE were fairly experimental during that tour as well, and they won it 4-0 away. So I don't think the Dutch will be underestimating this UAE team at all.
So we've talked about the lead up to the teams. We don't know the result of the toss yet. We're just leading up to the stadium here. Well, we've done a few laps. Jay, who's been in numerous cars on the way to stadiums, is sending our driver every which way, which is probably good because we get a bit of a delay here to talk through this a bit more. But we seem to have found the same gate that we've been denied from a couple of times previously. But we've got the same... We've got the right pass this time, so I think he was already shaking us away, seeing that he'd turn us away from the nightclub beforehand, but he's allowed us in, which is great. But is this game going to be decided by who wins the toss, or how do you see it panning out, Bertus?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. We've not had a look at the wicket yet. We know that they are going to be playing on a fresh wicket this time, which the Dutch will be fairly happy with, given the fact that probably it'd be a lot easier to get the most out of their pace attack, and that is what they're really banking on. But yeah, it'd be you think either way, good toss to win.
What would you be doing?
I expect I'd be losing the toss.
Well, okay. Well, I think that the thing is, we're up for a cracker of a game that's going to be tough to call. For me, it's Chirag Suri and Rowan Mustafa, although they were out cheaply against Canada. It was Mohammad Usman that brought home the hopes and dreams of a nation when he got his half century, and I think it was the second highest score for UAE in T20s. But game two, just as we were getting out of our Uber, so don't mind the sounds of doors shutting and whatnot, but game two sees Namibia, probably not so much a pre-tournament favourite, but definitely a pre-tournament one to watch with the talent that they've had on show. Oman, Namibia. If we talk briefly about their lead up to this point, Oman was probably a bit more expected of them. They seemed to be cruising. Not so much cruising, they dropped a game against Ireland, but they came up to their final tie, just needing a win against Jersey. And that didn't happen, Jay.
It certainly did not. Really, really quite surprising, given that, at least in my books, Oman were one of the pre-tournament favorites in Group B. And you know what? To be honest, I've been waiting the whole podcast to say this. I think Namibia's secret weapon in that game is going to be their two left armers, led by Jan Frielink, of course, who, if my math is correct, is the top wicket taker in the tournament.
Yeah, that's correct. You seem to have a thing for left arm, but are you a left-hander by any chance?
I kind of wish I was, because I used to really look up to Zahir Khan when I was younger, and I like to think I was a right arm version of Zahir Khan, but slower.
And a Hong Kong version, of course. Yeah. As you can hear that lovely sort of Hong Kong international school accent. He actually went to KG5 school, the alma mater of one Dermot Reeve, ex-Hong Kong international and also England World Cup finalist in 1992. Well, that's Oman. I think it's been a tough one, hasn't it? Like, I think we've expected them to not cruise through, but to keep performing at this high level. They went through their pentangular T20I series undefeated and looked fairly strong during the start of the event, but they never had a large score to chase. And when they did, that was against Ireland, chasing around 181, I think it was. They came up short, although they got to over 150. It doesn't matter. It's 2 points to the other team. And to me, Bertus, I think this game may be more than the first one, maybe more decided by the toss, because to me, it's going to be about getting runs on the board and putting pressure on the team chasing, where I think if either team has a weakness, it may be either that they haven't been able to get there in the chase, or at least they haven't been put under pressure enough times. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's fair as well. Like Namibia, they've looked like at least they're coming into form at exactly the right time. But the last two wins they've had, they've not indeed had to chase anything huge. Oman, yeah, well, we saw kind of loss of a couple of early wickets against Jersey, really put them under pressure. And Zishan Maksud, he had a fighting half century, but he looked like he was really struggling in the heat. And you just wonder whether the conditioning is there back end of a tournament. I think that this really, it's a game that go absolutely go either way.
There's been a lot of chat around, well, of course, the weather conditions here in UAE, which have been no surprise to anyone, organisers or fans or players, and as we stand out in the sun sweating as we finish this off. But has this shown us a chink in the armour of the structure of what otherwise is a great tournament, about having these games back to back, and especially at the back of this event, whilst these four teams will have two bites of the cherry, to have to play two games in a row?
Yeah, I mean, back-to-back games is something that associate teams are used to. You see it a lot, we saw it a lot in the World Cricket League, of course, you have back-to-back 50-over games. And sometimes in conditions that are arguably even worse than this, if you're out in Malaysia with the humidity that you have there. But it's difficult to say like just how much the schedule can affect a tournament like this when you're playing back-to-back games in this sort of extreme heat. It's not something that generally you see with full-member cricket at all that this really comes into play. We've seen several players really just wilting in the sun. We've had several like hospitalised. It is a grueling tournament, this.
It's been interesting to see and hear that a lot of the players that have been hospitalised, now you did mention Zishan Maksud was struggling. I think he was actually physically ill on screen. I think there was a few messages going around. Did Maksud just spew on live TV? So it's not necessarily only those from Europe, but it just seems the Scots and the Dutch seem to have really felt it more than anyone. And these were the two teams that were also out at the ICC Academy grounds to start with. Jay, you were out there watching. You're also in Malaysia for Cricket World Cup Challenge League A, the first round there. How have you seen the weather affecting the players here, and how does that reflect on the structure of the event for you?
I mean, I think first it's worth mentioning that this weather is rather unseasonal for the UAE. It's supposed to be a lot cooler. It's definitely a lot harder here than it was in Malaysia. Of course, you had the pollution in Malaysia. But, the thing about Zishan Maksud and him getting sick, you have to remember that was actually an afternoon/early evening game. It's supposed to be a little easier back then. And he was batting second. So it just shows you that this is not easy. And the uncovered grounds at the ICC Academy and the Tolerance Oval, the ironically named Tolerance Oval, it's very, very hard. It's tough. Back-to-back games, it's tough.
Yeah, so Bert is in the background. It's intolerable and intolerant to spectators. I think PDP was talking about it, saying it was like an oven. Actually, no, it was Barney yesterday saying to us it was like under the marquee, and it was like an oven. So you had to go out into the blazing 35-degree heat sunshine to actually get some respite from the heat. We're going to wrap it up briefly as Bertus is pointing at his phone, telling me that the toss is about to be on, and obviously we need to be up there for that. Let's have some predictions. Jay, we've got two matches on today, and the losers, as we said, come up against Scotland and Hong Kong tomorrow, and there's a lot to talk about both those sides, which we'll cover in our pod tomorrow leading into the matches with whomever is not successful today. What are your predictions for today?
I think the toss is going to be key. I'd say Netherlands first for the first game, and Namibia for the second.
Bertus, what are you thinking?
Well, I'll be a good sport and I'll take the other side of that bet. I think that the two Asian teams probably just a little bit better equipped to be coming back onto the field in this sort of weather. And I think also, I mean, home advantage is huge in these tournaments so often. The UAE they've had the upper hand over the Dutch in the last few games they've played. I think that's going to play into it as well. As a closet Dutch fan, of course, I hope that Jay wins this one through, but I'll take the other side of that bet.
When you say closet Dutch fan, being the only Dutch cricket journalist here covering the event and the self-appointed worst cricket journalist in continental Europe, but an expert on Microsoft Paint and Excel and LibreOffice as well. We'll be hoping to get up his amazing Cricket World Cup Super League simulator soon onto the Emerging Cricket website. For what it's worth, my predictions are Netherlands to come through in game one with Ryan Tentuskata to play match-winning knock. He's been in great form. If it wasn't for players dropping around him against Scotland, we may not be having this conversation because they may have scored the runs quick enough to get ahead of Papua New Guinea. And I think whoever wins the toss and bats first in game two will win that match. So just reminding you, that's Netherlands against the UAE. First up today, a 2:10 p.m. start. And at 7:30 we will see, well, we will be watching, and hopefully you will be on all the broadcast networks across the world. That will be Oman against Namibia. The loser of the first game will play Scotland tomorrow for the fifth and penultimate spot in the World Cup, and Hong Kong will come up against the loser of Oman and Namibia. So in the meantime, keep enjoying the coverage of the Men's T20 World Cup qualifier on emergingcricket.com. And as Daniel Beswick would say, enjoy the rest of your day wherever you are around the emerging cricket world. Goodbye. Yeah.